This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Capitol Hill, there's a determined effort underway to reform Medicare, the popular government program that subsidizes health care for the elderly. Both houses of Congress have put together plans to expand Medicare coverage to include significant prescription drug benefits for the first time. Many welcome these proposals as an overdue recognition of the burden that prescription drugs place on seniors' pocketbooks. Opponents, though, argue that this is a huge and expensive addition to an already unmanageable program, and still others say it doesn't go far enough, that it will leave some seniors uncovered and others baffled by red tape. Later in the program, we'll pay tribute to Larry Doby, the man who broke the color line in the American League. He died yesterday. But first, Medicare reform. When the dust settles in Congress, what will a new prescription drug benefit look like? And how will it affect access to health care for our nation's elderly? If you have questions about Medicare reform and how it might affect you or your loved ones, give us a phone call. Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now by phone is Thomas Scully, the current chief administrator of the Medicare program. He's on the phone with us from Baltimore, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, how are you, Neil?
Very well, thanks. Can you help us understand this debate? What are the changes that are being proposed?
Well, they're pretty significant. I've been working on this for about 20 years, as have many other people in Washington. Essentially, what we're trying to do is give seniors two things. One is a prescription drug benefit, and especially a very large benefit for low-income seniors. Not quite as hefty a benefit for people as you go higher up in the income stream. And secondly, about 89% of seniors are in the Medicare, traditional Medicare program, which my agency runs, and we basically do it as a federal, you know, the federal government sets the prices at the federal insurance program.
Mm-hmm.
About 11% are in HMOs, what we don't think exists in the Medicare program, which most people under 65 are in, are PPOs. If you look at the population of under 65-year-olds, about 70% of the population or in PPOs, and we think a lot of seniors, especially people who are now, you know, 62, 63 and aging in the Medicare, would prefer, they get a better benefit and a better value, and prefer to stay in their, you know, Blue Cross of Pennsylvania plan or whatever, and have the government pick up, you know, what is essentially about a 90% subsidy value.
And
we think they get a better plan and better benefits, and that kind of PPO plan, which is the dominant plan for people under 65, does not exist in Medicare.
And PPO is preferred
provider organization.
Exactly.
It's basically,
you get to pick your own doctor.
You get any doctor, any hospital, any provider, but if you go inside the Blue Cross network or the Cigna network, you may pay a little less, and if you go outside, you'll pay a little more. That's kind of the dominant form of private insurance for people who are not seniors.
Well, some critics of the prescription drug reform say many Medicare recipients will end up paying the same, if not more, for their prescription drugs under these proposed changes. What's your response
to that?
Well,
it's an insurance plan, number one. People forget that. The goal here is we have about 22% of seniors, primarily low-income seniors, who have nothing. And I love Trish Newman. I heard your incoming comment from her.
Mm-hmm.
But she said it's not as good as the federal employees. For 17 million seniors, 44% of the senior population that are low income, below 160% of poverty in the Senate bill, they get a huge benefit, about $3,000 a year, and much better than any federal employee gets. As you go higher up in the income stream, you get less. But still, every senior in the country is going to get, on average, about $950 new subsidy value for drugs, even the wealthiest seniors, which some people are concerned about, in the Senate bill. So is that as much as federal employees get? No, but the bill is really focused on low-income seniors, and 44% of the senior population, 17 million people, are going to get a gigantic new drug benefit that covers virtually all their costs with modest copayments. As you get up to the upper parts of the income of seniors, they're going to get less, than which we think is appropriate. So if you look at it, as Trish mentioned, as compared to a member of Congress or a federal employee, poor people are going to get a lot more, and wealthy people are going to get less. But everybody's going to get significantly more than they get right now.
Other critics say any expansion to Medicare amounts to throwing good money after bad. What's the reason? What's the necessity?
Well, I don't believe anybody. Well, I mean, I love Medicare. I run it. I'm proud of it. It's a wonderful program. There's nobody over the age of 65 that's uninsured. That's the magic of the Medicare program. But we don't believe anybody would design the Medicare program. It's basically patterned after a 1965 Blue Cross plan. We believe nobody designed a comprehensive health plan for anybody today that didn't include prescription drugs, so we think it should be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We also don't believe that anybody would, you know, Medicare is very controversial. I've been working on it since 1980, and there have been very few changes. And we believe that, you know, if anybody sat down today to redesign how to spend $275 billion on 41 million people, they'd probably come up with the type of more modern benefit options that we're trying to give seniors. No senior has to change anything. If my mom or any senior out there wants to keep exactly what they have now, they'll get exactly what they have now, the traditional Medicare program, plus a $3,000 drug subsidy if they're poor, and about a $900 if they're not poor. They don't have to change anything. In addition to that, they will get an option to pick new benefits and the kind of PPO benefits that many Americans like.
One of the criticisms of Medicare, and I'm sure it comes as no surprise to you, is that the program is vulnerable to waste and fraud, and you're just expanding a program that's already vulnerable to waste and fraud.
Well, I love the Medicare program. I'm doing the best I can to avoid waste and fraud. But when you have the federal government fixing prices for every hospital and every doctor out of Washington and Baltimore, I work out of, we pay every hospital in Chicago the same amount, every doctor in Chicago the same amount, you get some perverse behavioral things out of that. We try to do the best we can. But, you know, I gave you lots of examples, but when you're running one central government-run insurance program, people find niches in the program, and there is some waste and fraud, and we're doing the best we can to shut that down. But we think that a modernized insurance mechanism would take care of a lot of that.
One of the concerns about Medicare now is the difficulty in figuring out who and what's covered, the red tape that we mentioned. Would either of these proposals cut back on confusion?
Well, I think it would. Just give me an example. If you're 66 right now, let's say under the new bill, you're going to have two choices. You can either get your traditional Medicare, which covers about 60% of your costs, which is the average value of that nationally is about $7,000 a person. On top of that, most seniors go out and buy Medigap insurance, and the average Medigap plan through the AARP this year, which is the most popular plan, is about $2,200 a person. That is pure out-of-pocket from the senior. And then on top of that, you're going to have the option to go out and buy a new drug benefit, which will be subsidized. So you'd have three different insurance packages under the traditional Medicare plan going forward. I believe many people would be very happy to buy a Blue Cross of Illinois or Blue Cross of Pennsylvania PPO, where they've got all those together, the base Medicare benefit, which has lots of copayments and deductibles, a supplemental benefit, and a drug benefit in one comprehensive insurance package, which most of them have when they're 64. It would be much simpler, in our opinion.
It would be simpler, but nevertheless, there are all kinds of, and again, these are still bills making their way through Congress. You mentioned the Senate version. There's also a House
version.
They're
pretty similar, believe it or not.
They're similar, but there's, you know, obviously the numbers are still being adjusted as we speak. Nevertheless, there are all kinds of areas where here you have to pay an upfront fee, and then later you're not covered at all, and then later there's an 80% government pickup.
Well, that's the nature of insurance. I mean, every senior in the country right now is paying $60 a month for their Medicare benefit. That actuarially is about 10% of the value. So, as I said, on average, seniors pay about $700 a year for Medicare, and they get about a $7,000 benefit. There are plenty of people that never use anything. You know, there are many people that never even use, you know, there are many healthy seniors that never use any of that. But that's the nature of insurance. Everybody pays something in, and when you get sick, you collect.
Yeah, but the question being, why is it all so confusing? And specifically, why is there a reason for a gap in the middle?
Well, the gap in the middle may not exist. That's a projection. And that's, again, once again, that's only for high-income people, which a lot of people miss. 44% of the population, lower-income people, 17 million people, will have no gap. The gap only applies once you're over 160% of poverty in the House bill, and if 160% in the Senate bill, 150% in the House bill. Over that, there are gaps in the bill, but that's basically an estimate of what we think it'll be. Essentially, the value of that insurance benefit, even for high-income people, is about a $1,200, $1,200 to $1,300 per annum insurance package for prescription drugs, and the estimate is that they go out and have people provide that in the market, and essentially the senior would pay a supplemental premium of about $400 a year, and the government would subsidize about $800 a year, roughly, and to get that in the market, you get that design that would have some gaps. But again, that's only for people that are higher up in the income stream. And most of those people already have some private coverage. The thing that we're really focused on taking care of is the 17 million people below 160% of poverty they're the ones that generally have no coverage and can't afford it.
Well, Tom Scully, right now, before we let you go, where does this stand in Congress?
Much to my delight, because I've worked on this for years and I never thought it would happen, I think it's a speeding freight train. I think you're going to have the Senate pass it by the end of next week and the House pass it by the end of next week. And there are substantial differences between the House and Senate bill, but in the scheme of the legislative process, they're, I think, workable, and I think it's very likely. I would have told you a month ago the chances were 20%. I now think they're about 95% that the president will sign a Medicare reform prescription drug bill before the end of the summer.
Well, Tom Scully, thanks very much for being with us.
Great, thanks.
Tom Scully's administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Coverage. He was with us by phone from Baltimore. And with us here in Studio 3A now is Joanne Silberner, NPR's health policy correspondent. Always good to have you with us.
Good to be here, Neil.
Tell us a little bit about the history of the Medicare program and the way that it's handled prescription drug costs.
Well, it started in 1965, and the big costs for seniors then were doctors and hospitals. So prescription drugs cost maybe a dollar a prescription back in 65. It wasn't even a thought. Nobody talked about putting it in. And there weren't many effective drugs. But as effective drugs came along and as the prices started to go up, there was a move in 1988 to add prescription drugs, and it actually passed and was signed into law, but the funding for that bill was from seniors themselves, and they objected to this mightily, so much so that the bill was repealed 18 months later. And then things got quiet for a while. I think people were waiting to see if various health care reform plans might do something somehow. But it's really in the last 4 or 5 or 6 years that with prices up, with a lot of effective drugs on the market, it's really gotten to be a desperate situation for some seniors, which has really moved it onto the front burner.
If Tom Scully's right, and this is a freight train at this moment, that has to mean it's a bipartisan effort at this point.
Yes in the Senate, and I'd say no in the House. In the Senate, if you don't have it, with a bill this big, if it's not bipartisan, it's not going anywhere. It almost wasn't, because they had a plan in there that this was only going to be available to people in managed care plans. But they said, no, we'll open it up to everyone, even traditional Medicare. And that brought Senator Kennedy in. It became a bipartisan bill, which really increased its chances of getting through the Senate. The House doesn't have to be bipartisan. The rules of the House are such that it's hard for one person to block something up. So in the House, it really does seem to be a Republican plan right now and going through, but that won't block it the way it would in the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been discussions about adding prescription drug coverage to Medicare for years. Why now?
The cost is a big part of it. Costs, I think, are up something like 20% in the last 4 years. Out-of-pocket cost to seniors, there's a new analysis out today by the Kaiser Family Foundation putting it, the increase in out-of-pocket costs annually from $650 in the year 2000 to $1,000 this year. That's a 50% increase, and when you're on a limited income, that's really starting to hit, and it's going to go higher. There are more effective drugs coming on the market. They're high-priced, and it's really starting to hit seniors.
The reforms in these bills, and they're still bills, not laws yet, but they're not scheduled to take effect until 2006. Why the delay?
Well, that's an interesting question, because it's actually taking longer than the Medicare plan, which I think was a little bit more than a year in between passage and an actual enactment. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of computer reprogramming. There are a lot of things like that. They do have something, though, written in, which is the prescription discount card that President Bush has talked about before. That would go into effect immediately, allowing seniors to buy drugs at a discount.
Mm-hmm. This is a big ticket item. Is Congress prepared to pay for it?
Well, that's another interesting question, because paying for it as written and paying for it as time goes on are two very different issues. You know, some of the costs aren't going to come in till a little further down the line. I think there's hope that the economy will get better. Senator Kennedy has talked about this as a framework that he can build on. Now, if that happens, it's going to become more expensive. The Republicans have talked about this as the first step. There are other provisions in this law that would, or in the legislation, that would encourage more managed care. They're hoping that that will come in and rein in costs. I think we're going to have to see how it plays out to see whether they're going to have to add more money, and we're going to have to see who gets elected to see whether they will add more money.
We just have a few seconds with you, but I know you were listening when Thomas Scully was with us. What about his analysis of the drug price issue? Was that accurate as far as you could see?
The drug price issue?
Yeah, in terms of the coverage.
In terms of the evenness of the coverage,
yeah.
And who's paying what, well, it depends on who you are. You know, if you're above a certain poverty level, it is going to be complex. If you're below that, it may not be complex. I think we really have to wait and see how the regulations are written.
These old devils in the details. I hate it when you say that. Joanne Silberner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Joanne Silberner is an NPR health policy correspondent. She was with us here in Studio 3A. We're discussing Medicare prescription drug coverage, and when we come back from a break, we'll take your calls. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, the email address, totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing Medicare reform and prescription drug coverage. If you'd like to join our discussion, the phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining the conversation now is Marilyn Moon. She's a senior fellow at the Urban Institute, the primary author of A Place at the Table, Women's Needs in Medicare Reform. And she's with us in Studio 3A. Good of you to join us.
Thank you.
And also on the line with us is Joe Antos, a scholar in healthcare and retirement policy at the American Enterprise Institute. And he joins us by phone from his office here in Washington. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Glad to be here.
And briefly, I wanted to get a reaction from both of you and ask what you think of the prescription drug proposal that is currently before Congress. We know there are differences between the House and Senate version, but let's take it as a fait accompli. Joe, why don't you go first?
Well, at least for the Senate bill, I think the Senate is bypassing perhaps the best opportunity we have ever had to equip the Medicare program to meet the unprecedented demands that the baby boom generation will make on the Medicare program beginning in within the next 8 or 9 years. The idea of implementing a prescription drug benefit, that's a very good idea. Medicare is a program that does not provide modern health insurance protection to people. That goes without saying. But we also need to concern ourselves with how the program will meet the demands of the baby boom generation.
Marilyn Moon, get your reaction as well.
Well, in general, I think that this bill is, the Senate bill in particular, is an improvement over what has been talked about earlier in the year, and that is to deny prescription drug coverage to people who stayed in traditional Medicare. Those people are the most vulnerable members of the Medicare program for the most part. They tend to be sicker. They tend to have greater needs. And they stay in traditional Medicare because they have voted essentially with their feet that it meets their needs better than the managed care options that have been out there for some time.
And the current proposal would allow them to stay where they are if they want to.
It would allow them to stay. Originally, the president was proposing not allowing those individuals to get prescription drug benefits, which would put them in a big dilemma in terms of how to deal with this. It still has some problems in terms of how that would work for people in traditional Medicare, because it is going to be confusing that they'll have to have three different kinds of supplemental of insurance policies, Medicare and two different kinds of supplemental policies, but it's a big improvement over what people were talking about before.
Okay, let's get listeners involved again. 800-989-8255. Our first caller is Pedro, who's with us from Philadelphia.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Basically, I'm with the Alliance for Retired Americans, and we rejected this particular Senate bill because a number of reasons. One is it will increase the out-of-pocket expenditures for most of the people who participate in it. It kind of opens the door for privatizing Medicare in a big scale. Three, it doesn't provide any incentives for employers to keep benefits for the retirees. So you're going to have corporations dumping people into these programs. And then finally, and this is the worst part of it, it doesn't contain any type of cost containment mechanism, so the prices of medication will stay down. It's a big windfall for the drug companies.
Marilyn, get your response to that.
Well, the caller has identified a number of problems, and there certainly are problems with this legislation. The one thing I would say, and I agree with what Tom Scully said earlier, we have to remember that this is a bill that's providing insurance, and you don't expect in your house insurance to make money every year on it. You expect it to provide you some protections against high expenses over time. And so from the standpoint of looking at it just in terms of whether people will pay more than they get, I think we need to be careful there. There are some incentives for employers to stay in, but that's a problem, and it's a question. When you offer a new benefit, will employers who have been moving in the direction of dropping coverage anyway use that as the excuse to do it a little faster? It's happening anyway. I think that it's not probably as big a problem. The cost containment issue that he mentioned is a big issue, I think, and there are a lot of people who are going to be frustrated that this bill is not very strong in those regards. But in a compromised situation, a lot of people are afraid of antagonizing the pharmaceutical manufacturers.
Joe Antos, particularly on that cost containment point, I was wondering if you'd like to weigh in.
Well, the whole question of cost containment in this bill is simply unanswered at the moment. The premise is, and I don't think this is actually going to work out in this. I'm going to stick with the Senate bill.
Okay.
The premise is that there can be standalone, let me call them pharmacy benefits managers. Let me call them PBM, standalone drug plans. That only offer prescription drugs that compete with each other to try to attract Medicare enrollees to their plan, through this force of competition, PBMs will have strong incentives to negotiate sharply lower prices for prescription drugs. And also will have an incentive to help the beneficiary make better use of the drugs that are prescribed to him and perhaps encourage beneficiaries and their physicians to try lower-cost alternatives, generics, for example, rather than name brands. A lot of that, I think, is absolutely right. I think that is, in fact, something that does happen with private insurance plans, most of whom use that kind of a system to manage their drug benefits. However, the real question is, would these standalone drug plans actually come into being, given that the Senate has a provision that I think frustrates much chance that such plans could compete? So I think the real feasibility question here has to do with whether the plans will show up to the table. If they did, then I think we have plenty of evidence that these kinds of plans have been extremely effective at negotiating discounts, getting better prices, and doing a better job of helping doctors and patients utilize prescription drugs.
Well, one more thing. The plan being discussed in Congress right now is worse than what the seniors in Pennsylvania have right now in the state-run prescription drug program. And if for people to switch from what we have in Pennsylvania to go into what the Senate is offering would be a setback for a lot of people. We're costing a lot of money, including low-income seniors and moderate-income seniors.
Okay, Pedro, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's try now to go to Gershon, who's with us from Mountain View, California.
Yeah, and all the talk about Medicare and how great it is, nobody points out that many seniors have a hard time finding physicians who accept Medicare because of the fee schedule. There are more and more people physicians dropping out, and because of, they claim they're not getting paid enough.
Well, Joe Antos, that's definitely a problem.
That is definitely a problem, and it suggests a problem that I think we risk with a prescription drug benefit the way both the House and Senate have devised it. The callers were referring to the fact that last year physician fees were cut 5.4% in the Medicare program. Mm-hmm. This is unprecedented,
right.
What that has done is it's not that the beneficiary can't continue to see the doctor he's always seen.
No, usually that works.
Right, exactly. But if you need to see a specialist, someone you haven't seen before, that physician might be saying, "Look, I'm seeing enough Medicare patients right mm-hmm. now, and frankly, the payment just isn't good enough. I'm not going to see any more right now." That's a serious problem.
Well, more and more aren't taking any kind of insurance for that reason.
I think. Maybe the more established physicians who are beginning to wind down their practice.
They have a boutique practice where.
I think that's the exception rather than the rule. Whereas
it's very common in the Bay Area.
The public policy issue here really does have to do with whether a price-controlled situation will actually yield both lower cost and acceptable levels of service. I think the Medicare physician payment story that we've seen in the past year and that we'll repeat next year suggests the dangers of losing value in the program.
Mm-hmm. But I would like to add, I think the caller was quite right when he said that this is not just a problem for Medicare. This has been a problem for all types of insurance. Many physicians are now declining to take a lot of different insurance plans, private as well as public, because we've squeezed down on payments. Medicare usually has a mechanism that doctors squawk pretty hard, and then the payments go back up. This has not been a massive problem as yet, but we're starting to see problems, and it clearly is something that needs to be taken care of. But I would point out that the private sector is not the magic elixir here either.
We have an email from Helen Rod, who describes her situation. I'm 71 years old, living in the state of Iowa, she writes, with an annual income of $30,000 to $35,000, including Social Security. I take one prescription drug. I figured out how this proposed Medicare drug coverage would affect my pocketbook. I will get exactly zero money for my drug, and if the deductible for Medicare goes to $275, I'll be paying more money out of pocket. My supplemental pays the deductible, and you can be sure that my supplemental premium will go up. Therefore, I will be worse off than before. Marilyn?
First of all, there's some things that she should know. The $275 deductible refers only to prescription drugs, and this is a voluntary enrollment, so she does not have to enroll.
So if indeed she would have been worse off than before, she doesn't have to enroll.
She doesn't have to enroll, and it will not affect her Part B deductible, which I think is what she's thinking is going to happen, that it's going to go to $275.
I see.
But she's also one of the lucky ones.
This is the confusing red tape that we're talking about.
It's all very confusing. It's a very confusing program. But at $30,000 to $35,000 a year and with only one prescription drug, she's actually in the vast minority in terms of being relatively well off compared to what she's having to spend on drugs. Mm-hmm. For many people, they're in much worse shape than that.
I'm sure at $30,000 to $35,000, she may not regard herself as relatively well off. Let's get another caller in. Mary Catherine is on the line with us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Hi. I'll try to make my question really quick. My question really goes to the issue that there are a lot of people in this country who are receiving Medicare not as a result of being a senior, but as a result of being an adult with a disability who is drawing Social Security disability insurance. And I'm the manager of a program that's funded by the Social Security Administration to assist individuals with disabilities who are receiving federal benefits in making decisions about re-entering or entering the workforce. And one of the things that we find in our state is that we work with a lot of people with significant disabilities who have high prescription costs and aren't able to make the decision to go to work because as soon as they do, they're immediately deemed ineligible for the state-funded Medicaid program. And so I guess when we, in all of this talk about Medicare prescription coverage for seniors, how are we looking at that other portion of the Medicare population who are younger, disabled adults who would like to return to work but don't have the option because of fears of losing their medical coverage?
And Mary Catherine, I guess the state of where we are is that was a short question. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Joe Antos, I was wondering if you wanted to address it.
Oh, absolutely. The viewer, the listener is absolutely correct, but the folks on the Hill on all sides are well aware of this issue and are dealing with it. In the Senate bill, for example, the kind of person that she's describing is someone who is fully eligible for Medicaid services, including prescription drugs. And under the Senate bill, those people would remain in the Medicaid prescription drug program. That wouldn't solve...
No, wait, can I just interject something?
Go ahead.
I'm not talking about people who are fully eligible for the Medicaid program. I'm talking about people who are receiving Medicare, and because the amount of their cash benefit is significantly low, they're able to get state-funded Medicaid.
Oh, state-funded. I'm sorry. You said Medicaid, and I misunderstood.
These are state? In our state, your combined earned and unearned income can't be much over $780 a month, or you lose your state-funded Medicaid.
Right. Let me clarify that for everyone.
Okay.
What we're really talking about here, some states, including New York and Pennsylvania, are very generous, and other states are far less generous, pay
using only state dollars, no federal dollars at all. They provide programs that will help low-income people buy prescription drugs. The real issue here is, would a Medicare drug benefit, would that encourage the states to continue to provide those resources and continue their efforts on behalf of those patients? Or would these proposals tend to supplant or discourage states from doing so? I think in the case of the Senate bill provides some modest incentives for states to continue that effort. But as we all know, states are financially strapped, and states are reevaluating whether they can continue these kinds of programs at the levels that they have been. So I think this is a serious issue. It's a serious problem. The question is, in the final bill that comes out of the Congress, will this issue be addressed?
Mary Catherine, there may be more aspects to it that we need to go into, but I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
Your time.
And thanks very much for the phone call. We just have a couple of minutes left with you both, and I was wanting to get a response from each of you as it looks like the broad outlines of the bill, more than the broad outlines, pretty much the specifics of the bill are fairly well set. There's much to be worked out in conference between the House version and the Senate version, so it remains to be seen what exactly the bill is. But again, if we look at the Senate bill, Joe Antoso, what do you think is the, very quickly, what do you think is the biggest upside, and what's the biggest drawback?
Well, I suppose the biggest upside is that political gridlock on prescription drugs appears to be finally broken in the Senate. The biggest downside is the failure to design a sensible program that integrates all of the services, not just having standalone benefits, but integrates prescription drugs with all the other services and opens the door to the kinds of more careful management of care and addressing the problems of the sickest people in this country. Mm-hmm. We are missing an opportunity to reform the program. We are missing an opportunity to give people real choices. Instead, I think this is going to be a repeat very much of the problems that we've had in the past.
Marilyn Moon, the last 30 seconds are yours.
Uh-oh. The biggest plus is the $400 billion, which will help. The minuses, and I want to mention three very quickly. One is, I agree with Joe that you don't get the integration, but we should be doing that in traditional Medicare and not just in private plans. Secondly, the gap that's left in this benefit for a lot of chronically ill folks. And thirdly, some of the low-income protections need more work.
We'll check in on the bill once it's finally approved. Thanks to you both. That was Marilyn Moon of the Urban Institute and Joe Antos of the American Enterprise Institute. When we come back, the peculiar institution known as the embargo. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.